Storytelling was used in previous times to pass on the history, culture, and wisdom of a people. But often, women's stories were degraded as unimportant, merely old wives' tales. A woman's bookstore in San Francisco, called Old Wives' Tales, is challenging that stereotype. Carol C.J., publisher of Feminist Bookstore News, is one of the women who founded the collectively run and owned bookstore.
The store is a commitment to making information available to women. That traditionally, social change happens when information is available. When information is suppressed, change can't happen. It's, you know, the fuel or the feed for change. And so what the bookstore is an information center that tries to make all manner of information available to women. So that women, all the women that then have access to the information can take that information and go out and change the world in every way that's important to them. There's lots of personal feeding of the store and a lot of commitment and a lot of passion. I think the store runs on passion more than anything.
How did you come up with the name?
Oh, Old Wives' Tales. You know, Old Wives' Tales are what contain a lot of the truth of women's experience, but it's always, under patriarchy, it's always made fun of and sort of put down. And in fact, what's put down includes so much truth and is so vital. With the images of women and old women talking to each other and old women passing on to younger women, their experience and their information and all of us telling each other these old wives' tales, we're actually telling the truth of their lives. We want to resurrect that tradition. So.
Now there's a difference. I'm working with all these women. Can we all see the same?
She is the author of the book We Didn't Have Much, But We Sure Had Plenty, a collection of interviews of older rural women. Sherry talks of her experience, listening to and recording the stories of these women.
I'm Sherry Thomas, and I set out across the country 3 years ago to do interview farm women all over America and ask them about the meaning of their lives and what they had done. There's a line in my introduction that people don't believe, but in which I said I was too shy to order a hamburger in a small town cafe when I set off on this trip. And it was true that I starved some days because I couldn't face one more stranger. I partly did this book because I was shy and I wanted to find out how courageous I was. So I went and did the hardest thing in the world for me to do, which is to walk into strangers' lives and say, tell me about yourself. And what I found was two responses. The initial response was always from people, I'm not special, I don't have anything to tell you. And then came this astonishing openness, and women told me stories that I never expected that I would get on tape. And I have to say, some of it is that I cared passionately about listening, and I learned a lot about listening in the process of doing it. But also that there was a willingness to share themselves that created an atmosphere that made it easier for me. But it never got easy to walk up that farm lane or knock on that tenant farmer's door and say, tell me your story.
You really overcame a lot to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. And I also did it in 4 months, which I drove 20,000 miles alone across America in 4 months. So I had to, it had to take the first time, which was a certain kind of pressure in itself.
To marry when they did, do what they did, not do what they didn't do. We haven't been able to listen to women talking about our own lives and our own stories, and there's such a loud, overwhelming silence. And what the movement has done right from the first days of consciousness raising is sit down and talk to each other and listen to each other and find ourselves in each other's words and each other's lives. And that what the print movement, of course, is doing is reflecting what we're doing already about listening to each other and putting our stories down in print on paper so that we can read them, so that we can take them home and have them at 2 o'clock in the morning when the world looks dark, to support ourselves and inspire ourselves.
Storytelling in other cultures and times was a link for women to reach one another. The intimacy of sharing stories face to face is a quality often lost in our fast-paced society. In a storytelling circle, Sherry reads an episode from her book to a group of women.
So the piece I want to read is a woman named Irene Nixon, who has been a sharecropper and a field hand on a large farm in Georgia for her whole life. She's somewhere in her 90s at this point, but doesn't know exactly because her birth was never recorded. And her friend, who I also interviewed, told me that Irene had done broke down. And I have to say that Irene's done broke down means that she still chops all her own firewood, grows her own garden, raises chickens, and milks a cow, and she's somewhere in her 90s. And she told me she thought I was a little puny and pitiful, so Irene stands all of 4'10".
You had to believe what she said, I'm sure.
This is a piece of Irene's story from her childhood. My mama and them ain't never told us how old us was. When I go to him, I say, Mama, how old I is? She say, get away from here, madam. You old enough to be no good. They ain't never tell us our ages. Now, if a child ain't 1 year old, he can tell. If he two on up, he can tell, but us have never knowed. When I were a girl, I worked from Monday morning to Saturday night, working in the fields. We had corn and cotton and peanuts. It was a hard time, yes, ma'am. It was a time of trouble for me. I worked many times, many days, and I didn't eat a mouthful. I had a mean old daddy. I know he was mean, because he'd whoop us to death. If folks was to come to the house, you couldn't get a drink of water. No, not if a grown person was in there. You couldn't go in there. And I've laid down under the porch, and then when my mama come, I'd be sleeping, and she'd carry me into the house. I'd be sleeping under the house. You see, my dad wouldn't let me come in that house. He was a bad man. When my mama and them be gone to town to a show or something, I'd stay outdoors all the time if he'd get at me, I could run. And he'd come in out there making wood, and he'd say, you didn't come in that house when Lily was gone, and you better not come in there now. My mother was named Lily Darver. Us called her Lil. Us ain't never called her Mama. Us called our father Will. He was mean. My mother was just as good a person as ever put her feet on the ground. My mama was good. My mama brought me buckets of something all the time when I was over there hiding. Brought me something to eat. My dad wouldn't let me eat there. You see, now I hate to tell you about him, but yous is a grown young woman. You see, he was a bad man. He'd be at us girls, you know, he'd get in us. And us that wouldn't do, you know, us that would say we'd call our mother, us that wouldn't do nothing like that, well, he called it punishing. He'd let my sisters go frolicking and things like that, and I'd stay home all the time. I didn't go nowhere. He called it self-punishing. That was his punishment to bring me round to his way. But I hold out to the end, and that were my daddy. I had a hard time, and that's the truth of it. I come up so hard, I'd be standing in the field by myself, and the cotton was high. The cotton be higher than I be. And when I'd hear the wagon going, I'd lay down in that high cotton to keep them from seeing me out there by myself. I didn't want them to see me. I've lived through hard times. My mom would cook a pie and go to the fields and he'd let them eat out of it, but I wouldn't get none. You see, that'd be punishing me. He'd get all the girls that way. And them that wouldn't do, they wouldn't get nothing. But I wouldn't do that myself. No, I would have died. Because I didn't have the sense about running away or nothing like that that children's got now. But I told the boss man, yes, ma'am, I told him. I told him, God knows I did. I don't know how old I was when I got away. My mama wouldn't tell me how old I was. But I wasn't taller than the cotton. I was real little. And the way I got away, the boss man know a white man that said something about going, and he took me one morning when my daddy were off working, when I could get off. If it hadn't have been for him, I wouldn't have got off, because if I'd stayed around there in the country in that wintertime, my daddy, he'd have killed me. Well, I went to America's, and I don't know no one there. I got there, and I didn't know nothing about going nowhere by myself, you know. And the man carried me a piece in his wagon, and then I just walked on all by my own self. And when I got to America's, the law carried me down to a house, a lady house that would let me stay there. I was working at the courthouse, washing towels, you know, to live off, carrying them towels down to the courthouse. In America's, I did what the white folks want. I worked in houses, different ones and another. I get a little something, not much. Yeah, we talking about a little money. And when I got it, I thought I had about $100. They wasn't paying me anything a day, just giving me a little something now and then. And I was just as glad of it as if I had $20. Just gave me a little something, not much. Sometimes we're nothing but something to eat. Something to eat. I stayed in that house where I were working. Weren't no working folks then. They didn't hire no folks to work like they do now. You just did the best you can. And I'd say a little bit is better than none at all. And I'd say that today. I got a thankful little to be blessed for yet. I come up some hard. Sometimes I'd be here by myself thinking about how I come up, and I'd just be quiet. Yeah, I come up tough. She glad for it.
What do you suppose was behind her mother not telling her how old she was?
I think partly they put kids out in the fields to work really, really young. So that whole image of you old enough to be trouble was, there was no concept of childhood for the most part. And I hid that from several other people, both black and white, particularly in the South, where births weren't recruited and you went to work at as early as you possibly could. There was no concept of childhood. So I think that's mostly it. And also that her parents had been slaves, so it was really out of a tradition where there was no recorded history and no concept of that kind of structure, I think.
Do you get the feeling that it was fairly commonplace for fathers to have incestuous relationships with their daughters?
Out of all the interviews I did, 12% reported either incest or wife beating. And given that they were talking to an absolute total stranger, and I didn't expect to ever get that kind of material, and that's what they say the national average is, I think that 1 out of 10 was sexually molested in some way or another. And it was real. That's what I meant partly about the astonishing openness. Not just that particular material, but that material surfaced says to me that there may be far more people than we have any idea of who've gone through those experiences.
Well, what amazes me is the women that have repressed it to themselves. And that act of remembering is so much the context in which you remember, and who's there to remember it with you, or who's there to listen. And that has so much to do with remembering in a way.
Today, the medium of writing has taken over the roles of earlier oral traditions. And just as women's stories were belittled in the past, large publishing institutions still perceive women's stories as less important. A women's publishing movement has grown up to fill this need. Old Wives' Tales, as part of a network of women-controlled publishers, printers, and distributors, enables women to communicate with one another. Carol C.J.
I love this wonderful slogan about freedom of the press belongs to she who owns the presses. And even though America claims to have freedom of the press, it literally press belongs to the white male establishment, and a good deal of women's literature and women's work has not been published over the years because the people that own the presses and the publishing companies don't think it's important or feel like it threatens their interests, which in fact it does. And so a lot of very important literature and a lot of the information that we've needed to make changes has not been available. What was very clear very early on is that the only way that we could depend on sharing that information was if we printed it up and we published it. It was a very, very exciting idea that we could buy our own printing presses, we could teach each other to print. The number of women who have invented printing on their own, I think is phenomenal. And invented with a group of women, how are we going to put this, how are we going to make this machine run and put our words out? And a group of women would then figure out how to make that machine run and put our words out.
Part of what hit me is how extraordinarily special very ordinary people are, and that how that's what's taken away from us in the culture is the stories of simply ordinary people with the heroism of the way TV or film operates most of the time, that we lose those stories. And I guess what hit me most intensely at all was at the end of the book, realizing that I had never sat down with my own mother or grandmother and asked them the same questions I had felt free to ask strangers all over America, and how I don't even have the stories of my own family's lives.
Do you now?
Yes, actually I did, but it took much more courage to ask my mother than it did to ask a stranger.
Hmm. In a great deal, the bookstore is the voice of women, is a voice of women, is in fact a symphony of women's voices talking about our lives, our experience, bringing together as much diversity, bringing together all of our diversity in one place so that we can appreciate the richness of our experience and recognize and support one another's experience and enhance our own lives.
You're my home.